So you're going to edit this backwards, right, Trent?
Yes, yeah. Actually, that's a really good idea, Dave. I might.
I couldn't think. How do you even do that? How would you do
find
it?
Out?
You have to do a lot of
We're going to find out because I got to find some way to present this, and that might be it. I don't know.
Well, welcome to the episode, I guess.
Yes. This is the happy part.
Ben, first of all, I'm super impressed. Well done. I don't know if I should be kind of fucking scared of you now. But I'm also amazingly impressed that we just went for an hour and 7 minutes, because I was like, I wonder if this is going to be one of the shortest episodes ever, because we're all going to be like, I don't want to talk about it.
If you like or dislike Gaspar Noé's work, he's definitely a conversation starter.
Yeah. Ben, I wasn't convinced you were going to be here, so I credit you and thank you for joining
Well, thank
us.
You. Thank you guys for having me on here. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Good.
Almost like you were Gaspar Noé at a club in a basement?
More like Gaspar,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Okay. Earbuds dying.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, later.
Of course, the film is very violent still today, but we talk about love and about relationships and birth and intimacy, friendships. So there are all those elements that we feel those elements much more. Mm-hmm. And also the difference is that when I did the film 17 years ago, I didn't have children. And today I have children. So the film is very polemic, but at the same time, in the good way, because it opens the discussion about so many incredible subjects that we have to talk about, because today society's rules are changing, and women are more ready and more open to speaking out. And I think that this film becomes very important, because I see even my daughters and their generation much more aware about these sensitive topics. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to find a common ground of communication, you know, about all people, to find, it's not about fighting, but finding a solution for all.
There are not so many movies that really learn you anything.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin and Dave. Kat is on holiday this week, and we have a very special guest tonight. Ben's been dead. How you doing, Ben?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Sorry for joining us.
Excited to be here. Apparently, this was a rougher week. I have to cop to the fact that I have not heard the show yet, but apparently this was one of the... more gruesome, I guess?
Well, I mean, you've seen the movies. This week, we're talking about Gaspar Noé, who, in my opinion, is possibly the greatest living polemicist filmmaker. And by polemicist, I mean the idea behind the work, in my mind, is to polarize response. So you're trying to challenge people, and you're trying to get a response that pushes people to what they will accept and what they will think. And I think he's the best at it. We talked about the movie Climax from 2018 back on our French horror episode. I thought that Climax was the best horror movie of 2018. The films that we're talking about tonight, I don't think are straight horror, certainly, but are probably more polarizing than Climax. And when we talked about that movie, we talked about Gaspar Noé has been quoted as saying he was disappointed at how well it was received. So that gives you an idea. He was disappointed that people liked the movie so much.
Yeah, wasn't it something like wow, a lot of people like this. I guess I fucked up.
I can do my impersonation if you want.
Oh, please do.
Okay, all right, here we go. Here's my impersonation. Even my father told me it's his favorite film. I have to take a long holiday and rethink my career. That was his quote about the climax. So we're talking about two other movies, one from 1998 and Irreversible from 2010. I don't know where we want to start. I have to admit that the polemicism worked on me. I almost bailed on this episode because I didn't know if I could talk about this stuff in a way that to me would be appropriate and that I would want to present to people. They are brilliant movies, in my opinion, and he's a brilliant filmmaker, but it's very, very difficult. So I just want to say off the bat, I am not saying that you should run out and watch these movies. I think that they're brilliant and they have a lot to say, but just be warned. I think that this is the most difficult material that we've covered, and we covered a Serbian film.
I think this week we can all agree we're going to talk about brilliant movies, but I don't think we're recommending that people watch them.
I mean, we are and we aren't. I don't know.
I watch horror movies, for like what's bad out there. Like, show me what's out there, what I'm up against. That's why I'm not, I love Godzilla, but am I afraid of Godzilla? I'm not.
Oh,
but
so you like the realistic horror.
Yeah, am I afraid of some guy who is just consumed by his inner voices and just festering this anger? But he's a kind of a quiet, functioning guy. But speaking of that, I think that we should start with I Stand Alone.
That would be chronologically. I think that I Stand Alone was the first major, the feature film. It was actually a sequel, and I haven't seen the first one he did, but I Stand Alone is from 1998, and the only way to see this movie right now that I know of is on a site called, get ready, it's called effedupmovies.com, EFF. So
the moment I got that link is when I knew it was going to be weird.
Well, I got, Dave sent me that link on the same day that I got a brand new MacBook. And I was like,
"You're like, I'm not."
So the first thing I'm gonna do is brick my new MacBook on this fucked up link that Dave sent me to watch this movie. Like, fortunately, he gave me some pointers. Everything turned out fine. I think we're still only a few days into this, but effedupmovies.com. And like, if you want to watch this movie, Dave has the best advice. Just be prepared to fight the pop-ups, and you will be fine.
Yeah, lots of pop-ups.
I was getting a little nervous about it. Wasn't like, a bad what list site. I'm on.
It was not a bad site.
It functions for finding effed up movies. I think there are plenty of other effed up movies I might have to go check out on there.
I was kind of bummed because I thought maybe they'd have Salo. So like after I finished I Stand Alone, I was like, oh, let me search for Salo. And even that site doesn't have it. Like that shit is so in the underground that I don't know how to find it.
Well, you got to go to two more effed up movies.
Well, one of the struggles I think
for effed up movies.
One of the things that we try to do, and I think that everyone would agree with me, we try to talk about movies that anyone can go online and see because we want people to watch the movies and we want to have a conversation about them. But at the same time, it's kind of sad that in the digital age, a lot of stuff has been lost, and you can't just go to the weird video store and rent it. Sometimes it's really hard to find the stuff. So that's why we're doing this movie that is only available, as far as I know, on that one site, effedupmovies.com. And it is from 1998, and it's called I Stand Alone. I don't know, Dave, if you want to set this one up for us.
So I Stand Alone is early in Gaspar Noé's career. It's probably like the most understated visually of all his movies. It's a story of a guy who's the son of a butcher, which I also am, who in essence this movie is about like classism. And I thought that also in the next movie we'll talk about, there's also some classism themes. But this film's like a firm reminder that like embarrassment and pride are the most dangerous human emotions. And especially when they're like internalized, like this character does, It's a story of like a very terrible man, but it spares no expense putting you in his head to experience why he is this way. It's a commentary on like severe mental health problems. Revolves around this like pessimistic narration that isn't a totally far off perspective that you kind of get sucked into. Like, he is terrible, but at the same time, Gaspar Noé makes him kind of human. And it's mostly like this feeling of extreme insignificance that this guy has. And it's not just for him, but it applies to mankind as a whole. So he has pretty much no respect for human life. and he's basically just had this voice is muttering in his head the whole movie. It's like, we always complain about narration, but this is all narration. And it's so overdone that it really works. I don't know if it's that or if it's the French being the narration. Maybe if it was like, you know, George Clooney doing this narration, I wouldn't be as into it. But the dialogue that goes on in his head is amazing. And it makes you wonder if the person who wrote it themselves might be a psychopath.
But it also, I definitely thought that when I was listening to it.
Yeah, it reminded me of Bukowski.
If this isn't his thoughts, then this other person must be just as fucked up.
I had one favorite line. There was so many like just amazingly depressing lines in this movie, but one that I really liked is he's speaking of his mother who died during childbirth, and he says she got her thrills and didn't stick around to show her face.
Well, speaking
so like,
so speaking of that dialogue, Gaspar Noé filmed this entire movie with a 3-page script, like classic Gaspar Noé. And wow. he didn't write any of this until after the movie was shot. And then what he would do is he would get progressively drunker the more he wrote. So he would kind of be out of his mind by the time he reached the point where the butcher was losing his mind. So just another like glimpse into Gaspar Noé's head and the way he goes about making movies, which is so non-traditional. But yeah, he filmed the whole movie and then said, okay, let me get wicked shit-faced and start writing what I think this guy would be thinking.
Oh, so you're saying the narration came after they shot?
After principal film. Yeah, after principal filming was done, then he scripted it.
Wow.
One of the things that went on to be like Gaspar Noé's signature that was my other favorite thing about this movie. I don't love this movie, but I think it's an important evolution of his filmmaking. No, I do like this movie. I don't love it, but I love the part where it says it puts a 30-second warning on the screen. To me, that was like some real like extreme horror kind of shit. When it's like you have 30 seconds to turn this movie off before it goes off the
to
rails.
Get out.
And it's so Gaspar Noé, and I really love that. He's always like really clever with the intros and outros and the titling, and all that stuff is always very visually exciting. And Ben pointed out to me that he watched these movies in chronological order. And
well, I watched them in the order you sent them, but
the guy from I Stand Alone is in the first opening scene.
He's in the opening scene of Irreversible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says pretty much, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but he says,
he just got out of prison for something.
Fucking my daughter or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't really spoil anything, but
except his daughter.
Yeah. He has a daughter in the other movie. Oh, that's, yeah. I see where you're going.
Yeah, it is a little confusing, but I want to get Ben right off the bat. I just want your reaction. I don't know if you had, maybe you could tell us if you had you heard of I Stand Alone, and what was your reaction when you finished the movie?
I mean, I don't really like watch horror movies ever, so this was kind of just like, you know, a fun little experiment. But I definitely thought that, you know, the whole time I'm like, this guy seems to be making his life worse for himself. I question there was a lot of these like dramatic cuts with the like,
Yeah, the zoom up and
that
stuff.
Bang,
yeah.
That one noise that they have throughout the whole movie. Like, it was the same
noise.
It was
like it would always do that cut of like a really fast zoom in or something. So I was going to ask you guys if that had any like symbolism or anything, but I don't know. I found it. Yeah, I guess. I found it to be. I just kept thinking about how he was kind of doing this to himself and the amount that he kind of complained about how his life was just not what he wanted it to be. And then he would, you know, do all these things that seemed to just make it worse for himself. So I don't know. I think I enjoyed it. But it wasn't something I would recommend, I think.
I didn't enjoy it. It's a difficult one for me. I tried to bail on even talking about it. I do think that, Ben, I had kind of the same take on it, that I think that it is a giant pity party. But
yeah, that was my main takeaway.
But it's hard to separate.
I don't feel bad for this guy.
Yeah, but yeah. It's hard to separate because, like, you kind of, there's points where you're like nodding along in agreement with the narration, and like Dave brought up the classism stuff, you know, and it's by the end of the movie, I'm asking myself what the filmmaker believes, and he's challenging me to decide what I believe, and I believe a lot of what the narrator says in this movie. I do think that life is ultimately pointless. I love the opening scene where there's a guy in a bar, and he's talking about morality, and he starts brandishing a pistol, and he says, "This is morality," his gun, and the idea of morality is power. Ultimately, in some ways, socially, is power. So you start off like kind of thinking like, boy, these are some kind of deep takes here. And then by the end, you're like, this is like the biggest pity party I've ever seen on film. And I'm so disgusted. I got to tell the guys that I don't want to talk about this movie. That was what happened.
Well, you know what? What I took away from this movie is, at any given time, there's some motherfucker out there that's got three bullets in his gun and has these voices murmuring in his head. You know, that's like what my takeaway.
It made me think about like being at a bar or something and looking down like three seats, and like any of those dudes could be that guy.
Right.
So it made me, you guys are right, the whole pity party thing and all that. And like Ben, you said, you know, he just keeps making his life worse. I mean, he does some of the dumbest shit. You know, he just thinks, or I think, that a huge takeaway from this movie is the inability to not be the victim, you know, to take absolutely no responsibility for where you are at in life. To literally, this guy spends an hour and a half walking around as the ultimate victim and blaming people for 90 minutes, and it gets increasingly more insane. This movie, and Dave's right, we talk about not loving narration, but this movie is literally 90% narration, and it's trying to put you inside this guy's head. This reminded me of when I read Bret Easton Ellis's novel American Psycho, and I had a really hard time getting through that book, which, you know, is shocking with the amount of fucked up stuff I've consumed in my life, but that book puts you firmly in the head of a complete fucking psycho. And it's very, very detailed. This movie gave me a little bit of PTSD because I actually had to stop reading American Psycho the first time I tried and then go back, you know, kind of collect myself and finish it. This movie, at times, I really wanted to stop it because that guy was stressing me the fuck out the further he fell into descent. But at the same time, I couldn't stop watching it because I was angry at him. For literally, if he just stopped fucking talking, you know, in his head for a minute and take stock of his life and take a little bit of responsibility for it. So there was this real unease and disgust that I had that was kind of met with this anger, you know, that this guy couldn't take, you know, accept that he was responsible for the shit he was in. And that's ultimately kind of how I got through it. And until the end sequence, which Dave hinted at, has like a very big disclaimer. That just sent me into a pit of despair.
Well, for me, the most hopeful moment in the whole movie, and a lot of this leading up to the ending, and I think the ending is what is so, like, disappointing, is because it reminded me of, like, Taxi Driver or Joker, those kind of characters. But it kind of plays out a more, like, realistic version of that where they never do anything about it because people like that are kind of like prisoners in their own mind. But when he was about to leave town, he just punched the lady right in the baby, and he said, I'm going to go to France. I'm going to start a new life, and I'm going to do whatever I can do to be successful. If I need to be bad, I'll be bad. And at that point, I was like, oh, great. He can take that little gun he has and rob some people and get some money and not, blame his problems on everybody else. Even though that's, you know, not a great way to go about it, you're rooting for that when you're watching this movie because of his inability to cope.
Well, you talked about, like, at the very beginning, just, like, the amount of pride this guy has. And I think that's, at least when I was watching, that was the thing that I was like, is stopping him from, you know, doing things that would inherently help him in trying to, like, you know, get his life back or whatever. And there was one thing he said about, like, men have penises and women want to have penises or something.
They're mad. They're just mad because they don't have penises or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like watching. It's like he can do all this fucked up stuff to women. And you're talking about, like, why doesn't he just rob somebody? But then he's going and, like, begging these men for money. I'm like, if you have this gun and you're trying to move to France or whatever, like, just rob these guys. But you have so much more respect.
We both have the same solution. Just
for
just
these
rob
men.
People.
Than the women in your life.
Well, he's like, you like root for him every time he disses Nazis.
Yeah.
Every time he's like, those Nazi bastards,
really
you're like, yeah, all right, he might be
aspect.
All right. He might be all right. And then, you know, he'll turn around and be a Nazi himself, but it just shows his, like, nihilistic view of everyone equally.
Yeah, and he's somehow excluded from all of it.
Yeah, right. To me, I thought, like, that was interesting, and it's like, you know, there's people, it made me think of people that go online all day and call everyone a Nazi and are against Nazis, but yet they're like the biggest piece of shit. So yeah. There's so much going on here, and a lot of it is over my head, admittedly. I liked the line, at one point he says in the narration to himself, he says that living is a selfish act. And
I agree.
It is. Living is a selfish act, but you have to get over that selfishness, or you could end up in the depths of despair and depravity that this guy ends up in. Like, you have to accept that living is selfish. You shouldn't live. You should die. Survival is genetic. You're not doing anyone any favors, really, by living, other than the relationships that you have. And I thought he went to a very dark place when he was talking about relationships don't mean anything. He was talking about the only reason you like your family, the only reason you like your parents is because they do things for you. And the only reason you like anyone is because of what they can do for you. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's such an obvious troll, I think, on Gaspar Noé's part. But it's hard to not just, like, instinctively rebel against that and be like, what the hell is this movie saying to me? And I guess, you know, there are times where it's unclear, honestly, to me, if it's a critique of that attitude or if it's an endorsement. I'm not sure.
Right.
I think Gaspar Noé does
know
that.
Either. I don't know if Gaspar Noé just might be messed up.
He's super fucked up.
I think it's left for, you know, us to decide. I think he's merely just, like, presenting it as is.
Well,
and, like,
the one thing to know about him is he's not a college professor. I mean, like, he does all his movies, like, blasted on drugs. He highly endorses everyone to use drugs. He's out of his mind. So, you know, like, again, that's a good question. If these messages are being endorsed, or, you know, if it's a take heed kind of thing.
I think they're not.
I think at the end, at the end, you know, I think he sort of puts it out there though at the end of this movie, because, you know, this guy throughout the butcher, throughout the entire movie, is just pushing, you know, your patience and your limits for how somebody can present this horrible, horrible personality. And then at the end, he's, you know, performing a disgusting, fucking unforgivable act. But he's telling you that he has to do it because his love is far too powerful for the world to understand. I mean, I think ends this with a pretty big, you know, slam dunk on what he's really trying to get across.
Yeah, I think his movies always, they always really wrap up very well. But they drag you out to that point. He likes to torture the viewer. That's why when the 30 seconds warning comes on, you're like, all right, let's go.
Buckle up.
But how did you guys feel during the like weird end hug scene with his daughter?
Well, the thing is I couldn't ever tell if he molested his daughter or if he just had imaginary impulses of it, or
just
kept picturing it. But I didn't know if he actually did it ever, or if he actually loved his daughter but was just had this messed up thought in his head. I couldn't tell. Could you guys?
Yes.
I thought there was a little chesty thing on the balcony.
It's kind of spoilery. He starts to and then fantasizes about it as he stops himself. And then when he snaps out of the fantasy and you think, oh, thank fucking God he's not going to do this, that's when he goes into his hole. But I have to. The world just doesn't understand. My love is too powerful. And then he does.
He does do it. Yeah.
All right. I wonder if I watched an edited version of this movie.
We watched the same site. Because after the fantasy, like Kevin was saying, you think that you're off the hook. There is a scene that makes you believe that, oh my goodness, thank God this didn't actually happen. And then, I mean, it shows it happening after that. It happened. And that's what was so difficult for me. Like, you know, I'm all about the message of the movie. And I think that the message of the movie is I mean, I think it's pro life, I guess. I don't know how to say it, but I just at that point, yeah, I think that it took you out of it and thought like, oh, you know, and then it happened, and I'm not 100% sure why and what that message is, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of his movies. I mean, he tries to. If you don't feel uncomfortable watching a Gaspar Noé movie, then you don't have feelings. And I think that I love when I see a movie of any kind. If I see a rom-com that makes me feel anything, like, those are my favorite kind of movies, is any movie that evokes a feeling from me. Like, you just changed something inside me by staring at this little box. And the images you chose to put in front of me, you know, so I always like movies like this, and he's the most extreme form of that.
I guess my question would be, if I were to, and I've already said, I think he's a brilliant filmmaker and the greatest living, polemicist filmmaker. But my question would be, what is the value of telling me that I don't like that? Like, I don't think that I need to sit here and watch something like that happen in a totally unironic realism sort of context. Like, what is that delivering me to do that? Like, why are you going to troll me to that extreme level that I'm going to sit here and watch that, and then I'm supposed to say, oh, what an insight that's bad? Like, what?
I don't know. The thing I took away from that was, like, anybody can make their own mental justifications for anything.
Right.
So, like, if you compare that to something that in your life might seem like not even remotely that bad, you know, you can still be like, oh, I did that because of this, you know, whatever.
Right.
And right. It's like, he, this is the guy who can literally make a justification for anything.
Yes.
So, like, take it to the worst possible thing, and he can still be like, well, you know, I had to do it.
Well, you know, people who are child molesters, pedophiles, whatever, they have serious mental issues, and they're so taboo that we don't even treat them.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even offer any sort of treatment. It's just like, so all this, everyone who's like that, it's all internal with them. There's no one that you can go to and talk about it and try to, like, talk yourself off the ledge and make the right choice. Like, he was battling that the whole time. We don't offer anything for that. We only offer punishment once it's done. And, you know, it's not like giving a helping hand to a pedophile. What you're doing is you're saving a victim by giving this person treatment. You would be saving his victims from, you know, harm instead of him. But people don't seem to understand this. And there's all these taboo, you know, things with all kinds of mental illnesses that I think they all need to be treated the same. If it's going on in your head, like, people need to discuss it and they need to understand it, because these people exist.
That's a good point. I mean, that's a really good point, Dave. I mean, think about what we've done in terms of how it's viewed in the media, in entertainment, in your local sex offender registries and stuff. I mean, you know, what if we had, you know, what if someone was sitting at home and being like, I thinking about fucking children, and they have this healthy outlet to be like, well, I can go talk to somebody. Well, no,
and you could treat them before.
Yeah, no one's going to because they've looked at decades of media, be it real news, movies, you know, fictionalization, whatever. And they're like, well, I'm just going to be demonized, so I'm not going to go get help. I got this, you know. But as this movie shows, every day that goes by, your mental defenses are just crumbling. And in different humans, it's going to take longer for those walls to fall, but they're going to fall.
Well, I think it also showed that those people also, like, eventually just snap trying to hold that shit in. I mean, it's not specific to him, but, like, all the stuff he was trying to, you know, figure out in his head and find excuses for and whatever, like, those people dealing with that much stuff in their head will just always eventually snap.
It's true.
Well, maybe we could lighten the mood now and move on to the more optimistic movie called Irreversible from 2010, if we're ready.
Have you ever seen a happier ending to a movie?
Than Irreversible?
Yeah. It has the beautiful sunshiny day.
Yes.
There's things to look forward to. There's all kinds of stuff. It's a beautiful. It's a very happy ending.
I just want to point out before we...
You want to see a movie with a very happy ending, watch Irreversible.
Before we get going, this is...
The beginning is... A bitch, though.
Okay. It's available.
Did anybody else get really dizzy? Oh, sorry. You want
to? Well, I just wanted to say that Irreversible is available on Tubi. And you can also rent it.
Yes. I found it on Amazon or Amazon Prime. So,
yeah, I rented it. I didn't like the interruptions. It's really weird watching a Gaspar Noé movie and then, like, some quirky insurance commercial.
Yeah, like New York State insurance ad. Yes.
And then you're right back.
I did the same thing. I started watching it on Tubi and then I was like, fuck this. I'm renting it.
Did anybody else get really dizzy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very dizzying.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the way he set that tone in the beginning, and that's the way he told a story. This is a story that is told backwards, and thus the name Irreversible. And it's very cleverly done. People aren't talking like some weird backwards, like Pig Latin sounding stuff. It's regular conversations, but with this swirling camera movement and this disorienting cinematography. They just kind of take you backwards from... It's a revenge story. And it stars Vincent Cassel and Monica Bellucci, both two of my favorite actors.
Yeah, this is...
What did you guys think?
Well, I hadn't seen this in a long time. And, you know, the funny thing is, to me, it was much less disorienting. Like, the first time I saw this movie, I remember well, of course, and I was thinking, like, I'm sick to my stomach from the camera work. Like, I don't know if...
Yeah.
I literally thought, I don't know if I can watch this because it's so disorienting.
I almost texted Dave and said, I'm going to have to skip this one.
But the funny thing is, now seeing it a second time, I don't know. It didn't even, like, occur to me that it was... disorienting. I mean, it's been like 10 years, so
I think it's like when you know that that's not the whole movie, like going into
yes.
it, you're like, oh my god, is this the whole thing? But
yes.
when you know it's like it's gonna end,
yes,
you know,
yep,
yeah, it takes you longer than you want.
Yes,
yeah, that's the
he's
thing,
like
I kept being
around
like, this has
just
to
a little
end at some
bit
point.
Too long.
He's asking for this dude,
the Tenia
name.
Latenia.
And Latenia just keeps asking everybody, and it's spinning, and I'm like, this is never going to end. But they came out of it eventually.
So the spoilers, I mean, the opening scene is the spoiler pretty much. There's some other spoilers where it's backwards. But when I talked to you yesterday, Ben, I had remembered this whole time that Vincent Cassel was the guy who bashed in Latenia's face. But I didn't realize that it was
it's
Pierre.
Not, yeah.
It's Pierre.
Yeah,
I don't know
Pierre.
Why I thought that. I saw this years ago, but watching it again, it makes a lot more sense that it's Pierre. And yeah, we don't really want to lay too much out in these movies, but...
I guess that's the hard thing about this one is like the end is the beginning, so anything you talk about the beginning...
Well, I mean, it's right in the synopsis of the film. So if someone goes to rent this movie, it pretty much says that two guys are looking for revenge for a brutal rape of one of their girlfriends. So we're not really given much away. And this movie is kind of, you know, infamous. So, you know, I don't know how much you want to edit out, Trent, if I'm totally overstepping my...
No, I mean, it's...
Spoiler
it's
boundaries right
It's the way that
right
he
now.
Tells the story. It doesn't matter what the story is.
Yeah, it's backwards. Yeah. So the movie literally takes you through a series of about 12 scenarios that are all backwards. It starts at the end of the night and then brings you all the way to the beginning of the day. And it's funny that... Well, first, not funny. It's incredible that this is Gaspar Noé's second feature film. So this is what directly followed up by Stand Alone. I'm not talking about the content. I'm just talking about the fact that you have this young filmmaker who does I Stand Alone, which, you know, I think Dave pointed out, about the most straightforward thing you're going to get from Gaspar Noé, and it's still fucking bonkers. And then he comes out with Irreversible. But he was actually having a hard time getting financing for this movie. And it wasn't until he pitched it as going in reverse that people were like, okay, yeah, we'll throw a little money, because Christopher Nolan had just had a huge hit with Memento in 2000 with Guy Pearce. So Gaspar Noé kind of saw that as a way to be like, well, maybe if I sort of pretend or make people believe I might make something accessible, they'll give me a little bit of money. And then you guys are talking about the camera work, and it's pretty rare for a director to do their own cinematography, but all that fucked up stuff that you're talking about, Gaspar Noé did all of the camera work for this movie himself. He would go on to find a cinematographer, yeah. Benoit Davis, who would do all of his future films. But he held the camera for this entire movie himself, and he admitted that he was just doing copious amounts of cocaine the entire time so that he could keep up with carrying these cameras and getting these shots, and that he would get so fucked up during filming and then crash so hard that his line was, my arms would be so tired I couldn't even lift up a glass of vodka.
I mean, I really like that the nightclub that they're going to is called the Rectum. I mean,
yeah.
like the 12 year old me liked that part of it.
You need to find the Rectum.
And also I love the guy who in the opening scene is relentless about getting fisted. He really yeah. has a...
He's like, please, fist me. Please, please.
He does not stop. But you just have to think, this is one of those movies, and the last one, where you have to remember it's a movie. And thinking about some of these sets, especially in the rectum, like how you'd have to set these up and like what's happening when you say action, you know what I mean? Like, and if he was doing like, you know, tons of cocaine, that means probably all the cocaine that you see in the film was real cocaine.
Yeah.
Obviously all of the sex things that happen, are real and quite graphic, but that must be a wild movie set to be in a Gaspar Noé movie.
Well, imagine that for real, and then imagine having to get information at, like, a sex party and just going around to different people, just going to town on each other trying to get information.
The regret that you feel through this movie as it nears the ending is, like, just so horrible. And every time you see something... and things happen that are like almost like a foreshadowing. Goes, oh, we're really weird. We had that conversation because then this happened, or that dream that you had. They did a good job of tying things in like that without making it seem really intentional or contrived. You know what I mean?
Well, it's I think one of the, and again, there's a couple scenes in this movie, one particularly with Monica Bellucci that's, you know, it's what made the movie infamous. It's really, really one of the hardest things I've ever watched on film. But in terms of what Gaspar Noé pulled off in terms of telling a story backwards, once that big scene happens in the middle of the movie, you know, I'm a time watcher, like when I'm watching a movie. So I'm always kind of like watching what's going on in the movie and like sort of like, you know, clicking down to be like, how much is left in this movie? And I was shocked when that happened. And I was like, how the fuck are they going to get another hour out of this movie after the big scene happens? And it actually just got better. I mean, the thing, like you said, Dave, the things that he ties together and the little threads that are pulling along the entire time, all the way up until, you know, a really beautiful ending. It's a really impressive piece of filmmaking. When you put aside some of the really questionably brutal things he chose to film.
Did you guys all make it through the straight 6 minutes of flashing light at the end?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think I fast forwarded through that part.
I think I did. I do think
that's the only part that I showed Connie. I was like, oh, there's a part you can watch. Check this out. And it's just a strobing light. What must that have been like in the theater?
Ugh.
To see this movie and have it end with that, like, throbbing light.
I think everybody's leaving by then.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been intense.
Well, I think one of the things that the reverse order chronology does is it forces you to confront one of the worst, most graphic acts of violence. The revenge is first. So the first thing you see is that act of vengeance, and this is discussed during the movie. Vengeance is a human right, I think is said at one point. And it kind of presents that in a way that it's not as easily digested as it might be if it were presented after the transgression. There's some other stuff going on, like I'm not sure, again, with Gaspar Noé. I guess, you know, he's so good that, like, there's other stuff going on, I feel like, especially with the two main characters. There's Alex is the girlfriend, and then there's Marcus and Pierre. So Marcus and Pierre are pals. Marcus is dating Alex, but it's alluded to that Alex used...
Pierre dated her before?
Yes.
Yeah, Marcus and Pierre are not pals. Pierre is Alex's ex, who clearly is...
Right, but they're friends now, and they're
coming to town.
But they're... Oh, I thought that they were, like, friendly, and they were all cool with it. I didn't think.
No, they just
I think they're closer toward the beginning because they have a similar goal.
But Pierre is willing to follow Marcus through. I guess they're both seeking the same vengeance. I guess so.
He still loves Alex for sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, so, especially when he's
That's where it gets a little bit. Yes, that's where it gets a little more complicated. And I'm not sure. I think that there are some stuff, especially their conversations that. That make me question what exactly is being said. And I don't know, again, if it's a repudiation of terrible things or if there are just some terrible things on the mind of the maker. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that is prevalent throughout Gaspar Noé's movies are like extreme like racial intolerance, which from what I've heard from people that spent a lot of time in France is that that is real.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That's a real thing there. Like oh, yeah. It's if you're from like the wrong country in Africa, like you can't get a cab or you can't. There's very, very strong biases that I'd like that he shows that, although they're very like jarring when you're listening to these people talk to each other. But I think that it's probably kind of a real depiction of what it could be like in some of those places.
I found it very interesting that at the beginning of the movie, the two main characters, I hated them immediately just because I'm like, these guys are so aggressive. They're just beating the shit out of anybody they see. And then, you know, once you figure out that it's funny that they talk about like vengeance being, what was the quote?
A human right.
Yes.
A human right. Because my mind immediately switched once I found out why they were beating everybody up. I was like, oh, they're the good guys, you know?
That's the question.
But in the beginning, I was like, no way.
Some of the best, this is 2 weeks in a row, I'm like psyched with the realistic graphic violence that we've had last week in Bone Tomahawk. And this, the Tenia, when the Tenia gets it, I mean, what'd you guys think? Isn't that one of the most amazing face bashing ins you've ever seen?
Absolutely.
It took a long time.
Yeah, it took a really long time. It's very good. It's a mix of practical and CGI, but you know, I think like Ben was talking about, like that's the section of the movie where the camera's going so insane that you can get away with a lot. But I'd seen this movie probably around the same time that you did, Trent. Definitely not when it came out, but maybe like 2010-ish, and I forgot all about that.
That's when it came.
Yeah, probably, you know, probably just because I was so disoriented the first time I saw it. And this time I kind of knew what I was going in for, but I was still taken aback. And then the amount of fire extinguisher bashes that happened, I was like, is this ever going to end? Yeah, that's the last one. No, that's the last one.
You were
one.
Like that all week.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Watching the Gaspar Noé movie.
That
like,
scene.
When's this going to end?
That scene is 2020.
I was like, he has no more face left. You can't. You're just bashing like brains. And
do you like Gaspar Noé's movies, Ben?
I like that they're like weirdly paced. I think that's something that like doesn't happen a lot anymore. So I like that the pace is kind of tricky. But it's also a little bit slow in parts.
You don't seem fazed at all by this week. Everyone was like really worried, like having you on.
Yeah,
you don't seem fazed at all.
I mean, Ben has no problem with any of this.
I have no problem like watching movies. You know, the movie was made, so somebody's got to watch it.
I have some movies for you then.
I mean, that's the thing. I can't be the worst person on earth because somebody actually made the shit. So
I think that we should, because I mentioned the line, vengeance is a human right. There's another line that says, even animals don't seek revenge. Revenge is a human concept. You know, an animal doesn't try to like get vengeance for something that happened. And I thought that that was very interesting. And I don't know, but I think that that is, to me, the heart of this movie. If I'm being generous and I'm saying like, this is a brilliant filmmaker and what is trying to be said here, there's something about the fact that only humans seek vengeance, and we all want vengeance. We have a strong impulse, a human right again. But, you know, is that right? Is it wrong? Is there no right and wrong? I don't know. But that would be the flip side to that sort of expression. So I just wanted to make sure we cover that.
Well, I mean, whoever said that
is... Because animals don't understand vengeance?
Well, whoever said that has never owned a cat.
Yeah, that's fucking accurate.
Have you guys ever heard of the sunk cost fallacy?
No.
So the sunk cost fallacy holds that if you've invested a certain amount in something, then you have to keep going, because if you were to quit, no matter how futile it obviously is, and no matter how much you're failing and you're not getting, it's not working. But since you've invested like such and such time, money, effort, whatever it is, then that's kind of like you're in for a penny, in for a pound. And there are studies that show that, first of all, no animal does that. When animals are doing something that doesn't work, they just stop doing it. And that children under the age of a certain point, I can't remember the age, a young age, children don't do that either. They just recognize that it's not working and they just don't do it anymore. So I think that there's something going on there about human nature. And I don't know if it's good or bad. Maybe neither. Probably both, I guess.
Well, if you are a fan of revenge, which I guiltily am, you might want to hire the Revenge Squad from Irreversible. I like these guys. They came lurking around the scene of the crime, and after they put their statement in with the police, these two guys just kind of walk up, and they're like, yeah, we know everyone in the city, and we can find this person, and we have connections. The police aren't going to help you. I thought that was interesting. I wonder if, you know, there are people that offer this service, just going around to scenes, crime scenes, and trying to solve what the bumbling cops cannot solve.
Oh, I think it absolutely, that has to be real, because
yeah,
the way that it's so realistically depicted means that there has to be some kind of reality framework that Gaspar Noé is pulling off of.
Well, it's an underworld. You're kind of going on this tour through the underworld, I think.
Do you think other people can, like, inherit a reason for revenge, right? Like, if you hired those people, you think they could get to the level of, like, wanting that revenge for the reason that you want it? You know what I mean?
I think money.
Or is it just a job?
Because while we're talking about money. Yeah, we're talking about things that animals, you know, that we have different from animals, and money would be the big one. So they might not feel that same way, but you could certainly get them just as vengeful with some dollars.
They'll work just as hard.
So Ben, Gaspar Noé calls your manager today and says he wants you to star in his new movie. Do you take the role?
100%.
Wow, interesting.
I think it would be iconic, whatever it is. I mean,
I think it's just going to be you making love to one of your family members for 2 hours, and then you kill them.
It's iconic.
The end. And then, I think that's it.
I'll take it.
Well, Vincent Cassell wanted to be in this movie so bad that he actually threw up money to produce it when Noé was having trouble financing it. And did you guys realize, I never knew this. Vincent Cassell and Monica Bellucci were married when they made this movie. And
is Vincent Cassell the guy from I Stand Alone?
No.
Vincent Cassell is Marcus, the boyfriend.
The boyfriend, Marcus. The D-bag boyfriend.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like bro
central. Which of those two did you find that you liked better?
I liked Pierre
better.
But I actually think that Alex, Monica Bellucci's character, wanted someone more like Vincent Cassell's character, even though he was a dick. I feel like she was just attracted to that.
Correct.
I thought I liked him, but then I think it was like when they were getting on the subway or something, and he was just like talking about how good of sex they had in front of Alex, and I was like, oh, he's just trying to be a dick.
No, he was
just trying to make this guy jealous.
He was actually like dissing himself and saying that he could never make her orgasm.
Yeah, he was being
self-deprecating. Well, I thought he was saying that so she would be like, no, I did, you know?
Maybe.
I have a radical take on that. I'm glad. Well, I'm not. I don't know if I'm glad, but Dave, you brought it up. That, I think, is maybe a more important dynamic than the whole revenge thing. And that's one of the things that I think makes the movie difficult, is that I don't know if Gaspar Noé is sort of saying, whoa, you wanted the most dominant, aggressive man that you could get, because you're submissive, and there's a linking of submission with victimization, and asking, if you want to be submissive and you want to be dominated, do you want to be victimized? I think that he might be doing that, and that's pretty tough stuff.
It's true.
Yeah. That's a pretty astute take.
Yeah, it's hard to not, like, find, you know, like when you guys watch a bad movie, do you feel like you're a bad person for watching a bad movie?
No.
Definitely not.
No.
because, you know, there was the time I told you, like, I had this Serbian film. I had to, like, download something on my computer, and I was afraid to be at the airport. I had to go to the airport the next day and fly with my computer, and I was like, oh, my God, what if they found out I watched a Serbian film?
Were you afraid that they thought you might have searched some illegal websites or
dark web?
Just the
dark
web. The
content itself was so extreme it would be, you know, illegal.
Right.
Now
that to me is cartoon.
You hear all the time they like bust someone like, yeah, we found some sketchy stuff on his computer and he's in prison. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie to me is like a cartoon. And I just think it's ridiculous.
Compared to this stuff, I feel like
it is.
Yeah,
like this is where, like, you know, this is where, for me, I think that it gets uncomfortable answering some of the questions that are being asked and some of the things that are being said. Like, I'm truly like, I don't know if I want to even talk about this, you know.
So it does kind of make you feel like a bad person.
No, not at all.
When these things come up, when you're like...
No, not at all. I just don't know that I want to get into it. That's all.
Yeah, I think what Trent's trying to say is when you get into content this visceral, it's difficult to come in and speak about it and know if you're even going to have a proper take or a proper interpretation of it.
I appreciate that, Kevin. What if what this movie is saying is that women want to be victims? Is that something that we are... Oh, what a brilliant piece of art. Women want to be victims, and victimization is the same as sexual submission. Victimization is just the logical extension of feminism. Like, it gets into stuff that, you know, it's like, what the hell? It's uncomfortable for me take in a movie that's been made that I think is incredibly well made. But it's a little bit uncomfortable for me to be entertaining that kind of question. And, you know, so that's why I was like, you know, very anxious about even having this conversation.
Well, it shines a light on, you know, male toxicity.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. I think that was kind of the theme of both of these movies.
Every character, it's happening. I mean, in a different setting, Ben is right. Pierre would be a douchebag.
Yes.
Because of what he was saying in the subway.
Yes.
But compared to what the Tenia does... And even what, you know, Marcus does, his comments, he seems like the nice guy.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's why it's so powerful. And that's, you know, that's polemic. And I think that that's why it's so effective, because I think that it does force you to confront those questions and ask yourself, how comfortable are you with that conversation within yourself? And is the movie... what does the movie say? Sometimes it's unclear. And I think that's the function of art, is to ask those questions and to confront you. And sometimes you have to be uncomfortable. So, you know, for me, this was a tough one. But I do think that, you know, I'm not condemning the movie by any means, of course. I think it works.
It is definitely tough, I thought. And like, Ben's unfazed. But
totally, I can't believe
you're
he's
the
so
only
unfazed.
Guest.
I don't know, man. I
you're the only guest that has watched
media.
Both of the movies that we had to watch. All our other guests just had to watch one movie.
Yes,
and you
I
got
panicked
the hardest week. And you
Friday
got...
morning, I totally forgot, and I just back to back watched them. Didn't even take a break.
That must have been cool though, with the crossover actor. Though
it
in
was
the next
cool
one.
That he. I still don't understand how he ties into that movie at all.
I don't think he does. I think it's merely...
He's just hanging out there.
Yeah.
Like, he found his home.
Yeah.
He found his place.
Out. Well, I think that he just happened to live near the rectum. And okay. So they could hear the sirens. And it was just...
I mean, it just was crazy to me that, like, I ended the other movie, and then I'm like, oh, are these supposed to be, like, both of his movies? And then he's not in the movie for the rest of it.
No, I think it was just Gaspar Noé. So Gaspar Noé's first movie was a short film called Carne, about the butcher. And at the beginning of I Stand Alone, you get sort of a quick synopsis of what Carne is about. And then this actor obviously stars in I Stand Alone. So I think it was Noé's way of saying, okay, here's my third film endeavor. I just want to throw this guy in at the beginning to sort of give this bizarre monologue and have him just live outside. So that actor... Yeah, so it was the same actor in all three of his projects, and that guy actually passed away this year. So,
this year,
damn.
Yeah, April.
R.I.P.
April 2020. Actor named Philippe Nahon.
R.I.P. Philippe.
The music in this movie was done by Thomas Bangalter, who was one half of Daft Punk.
Yes.
And one of the things that Gaspar Noé had him do is use a background noise with a frequency of 28 hertz, which is almost inaudible but is known to make humans nauseous and experience vertigo. So just another way that Gaspar Noé is a massive dick.
He's just a fucking asshole.
Yeah, one of the most walked-out movies of all time. And I know we bring that up on this show a lot, but this you can imagine a lot of people really
did
walk out.
Yeah, but this time we really mean it.
Legit, yeah. And then Monica Bellucci, Gaspar Noé credits her with basically directing the scene, quote-unquote. Because he basically gave her the reins. And what they did is they did six versions of the scene, and he essentially let her and the actor, the other guy, Latenia, choreograph, I guess is a very fucking odd word to use, but and then again, just like a lot of no stuff that we talk about, and this was Climax, I think we said Climax was like a 7-page script. This movie, again, like the movie we just talked about, I Stand Alone, it was a 3-page script. So most of the dialogue that you see from our main cast, Vincent Cassel, Abbott Dupontel, who plays Pierre, it was all improvised. So Noé basically just said, here's the setup. And then what they did is there were, I think, 12 sequences of this that were all shot with no breaks. And what they would do is they would do each one up to 15 times. And then Gaspar Noé, in post-production, I think, would edit the best segments of all of them together. So if you watch this movie and you think about, you know, a 10-minute segment being shot 15 times and then a director going in and editing it as seamlessly as it is, it's another testament to Noé's at least technical filmmaking, regardless of what you think of the content. Yeah. And then last thing, sorry, I'm just doing my data dump right here. Gaspar Noé credits 2001 A Space Odyssey, which he saw when he was 7, as the reason he's a filmmaker. He also credits Cargill's Angst as one of his biggest inspirations for movies.
I saw in, I don't remember which one of the movies, but somebody had a poster.
Yeah, above Marcus and Alex's bed is a 2001 Odyssey poster. Yeah. All right, that's it. I'm done.
I forgot about the Angst connection. I'm glad you brought that back up. I knew that, and I forgot about it. He does cite that as one of his most formative influences, which makes sense.
Actually,
we talked about Angst.
I'm not done. Did you guys notice during the party scene that, and I literally immediately started looking this up, during the party scene, do you notice at one point somebody asks Vincent Cassel, who's playing Marcus, what his name is? And this is when he's all fucked up. He answers Vincent. And then immediately laughs and says, ha ha, just kidding, it's Marcus. And that was Vincent Cassel actually fucking up and telling somebody, like, when someone's like, what's your name? He's like, Vincent.
I do remember that.
Yeah,
that's,
I was like,
that's
oh.
why it's, like, it's so spontaneous with Gaspar Noé. These sets, they're probably not even sets. They're probably just at a party and Vincent Cassel just completely forgets that he's in a movie. I have a feeling that, like, you know, with these, like, 4 or 5 page scripts that they go into these movies with, that I just picture Gaspar Noé on like the roof of some hotel, like out of his mind on drugs at night, going like, I want to make a movie now. We make a movie.
Let's do it now.
cinema.